got somebody for you.
You must be Stan. How you doing?
Why'd they bring you in here?
Well, I just got in. I asked where the new guys were, and they brought me right in. Hey, sleeping, huh? Cute little guy. You know, maybe I'll just start with you. I'll let him sleep a little bit.
I don't want to do this.
Hey, I don't blame you. If I was in your situation, I'd want to get through this whole thing as quickly and with as little pain as possible. So, you know, let's try our best to make it a simple in-and-out procedure. What's the matter? Relax. You know, maybe we should spend a couple of minutes together, you know, to get acquainted before we, you know, before we get to it. What's wrong with you?
I don't want to do this.
But I understand, but, you know, what are your alternatives?
My alternatives?
Yeah.
To what, to you? I don't know. Suicide? Death?
Look, it's either me or them. You're getting fucked one way or the other. Hey. Lighten up, okay? Don't worry, I'm gonna help you.
Gee, thanks.
Excuse me, but I think a modicum of gratitude would not be out of line here.
You think I should be grateful?
Yeah, I mean, it's your ass, not mine. I think you should be grateful. I think you should be down on your fucking knees.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was such an honor to get a visit from you.
Hey, I'm doing a favor here, you know. You're getting me for nothing, you little fuck.
Boy, that's one hell of an ego you've got.
What the fuck is your problem? I did not come down here just to get jerked off, no. You know.
No. I'm not jerking you off. I'm not doing anything.
That's it. You're on your own. I'm just taking care of Sleep of Beauty. Hey, Billy.
Hey, back off. Vinny. Vinny Bag of Donuts. How are you?
This is Vinny.
This week on the podcast, fire up your Hewlett-Packard 5710A dual-column gas chromatograph with flame analyzation detector. Drive across the South in your 1964 metallic mint green Buick Skylark and buy a suit, and that suit better be made out of some kind of cloth. That's right, this week we're talking about My Cousin Vinny on 100 Movies I Love.
100 Movies You Love.
Yes, and we were finally into the Top five.
I am Paul Conlon. Yeah. Sitting across the table from me is Jason Martin.
That's right. I am. And we're finally in the top five.
I'm going to go ahead and call right now. This is the number five spot.
Oh, you're wrong again.
No, number five spot.
No, you're wrong again. We've mentioned it a few times here and there, but we've been saving. It's probably obvious if you're paying attention. We've been saving the final five for the actual final five. And we'll be doing them in order, starting with number five. And that's where we are now. My Cousin Vinny is number five on the list.
I was right. It's number five.
Oh, yeah.
We were just pulling my leg.
I just assumed.
You assume I'd get it wrong.
So yeah, exactly. The movie opens up. They're driving down the road. They're in a convertible. You see the college handbook is visible in the back seat. And it's obviously they're on a road trip because there's, this car's real messy. There's a bunch of food wrappers. And
they're college people, college books.
Yeah.
They're buying snack food.
Yeah.
Junk food.
Yeah. And, they're setting the stage for you, showing kind of what's going on. And they pull into a convenience store called the Sack of Suds. And they're buying beans. And they're buying beans because it's cheap. And, Mitchell is saying we need protein, and then Billy's saying let's get tuna. Tuna has protein, and Mitchell says, you know, beans have protein, and he says beans make you fart. It's like, we're in a convertible. He's like, oh yeah. So, and that can of tuna ends up being pretty important.
That can of tuna, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That, after the beans, Billy wanted. Tuna. You wanted tuna. So
right.
He grabbed a can of tuna, but he couldn't hold on with all that stuff in his hand, so he put it in his pocket.
Yeah, I agree. I like tuna. I don't like beans, so I would have been right there with him.
Yeah. I'd rather eat tuna than beans.
Right. And they drive off, and Billy realizes the can of tuna is still in his jacket pocket. And he's like, oh man, I forgot to pay for this. And Mitchell's fucking with him saying, you know what the minimum age of execution is? What in Alabama? No, what? 10. He's just laughing at him. But then the cop is following him. And they pull him over. They turn the lights on. They pull over. And the cop gets out and with his rifle pointing at him, show me your hands with a shotgun. And they're like, what the fuck's going on?
All over a can of tuna?
Right. What a mix up. And I like you get the lineup and the others look nothing like them.
They're all big, beefy, bulky.
Right. Country looking dudes. Yeah.
Redneck people.
Right.
The two New York kids.
Yeah, exactly. I love that they look absolutely nothing like them. The sheriff, you see this, go back to the store. The sheriff is in the store. And you see someone on the ground with blood, and it's obvious that he'd been shot. And they get
and it was the clerk that we saw earlier.
Yes, yes.
Not quite filling up the slurpee.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Making change.
I'm sorry, it's a slush puppy. Sorry. Yeah.
You know what the difference is between a slurpee and a slush puppy?
The name?
No. Slush puppy is actually like little tiny beads of ice, whereas a slushy is more like super crushed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, and it's the and one of the some woman comes up and, you know, talks to the sheriff like, you know, I heard something happened to, I forget what his name, Jimmy Willis, I think.
Jimmy Joe Bob, yeah.
Yeah, and the sheriff says he's dead. And then he gets a phone call and, like, I think we may get a confession. And but that, you know, the woman says, who would do such a thing? To the sheriff, and he gets a smash cut to Billy. Billy's sitting there, and they're questioning him. And the sheriff's saying, do you know why you're here? He's like, yeah, it was a stupid thing to do. I'll sign a statement or whatever, makes this thing easier. And, you know, he said something like, is it a big deal? And whatever. The sheriff's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Classic misunderstanding for the comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Billy's talking about one thing. The sheriff's talking about something else. We know what both of them are talking about. And the conversation flows.
Yeah, yeah. And they're and he's talking to Stan, his friend, and you know, he had nothing. Oh no, he's talking to Billy. He's like asking about Stan. Billy says he had nothing to do with it.
He didn't even know. He didn't even know.
Like, did he try to stop it? Did he know? I don't know. Did he try to stop it? Did he? He's like, well, he's my friend, you know. And Billy is like, is that a big deal? And the sheriff says, yeah. Aiden and abetting.
This back and forth conversation reminds me of the same one in There's Something About Mary.
Yeah.
Where Ben Stiller's character is talking about, you know, stopping to take a leak at the
right
and getting accidentally caught in the sting.
Right, right.
And they're exactly. talking about the serial killer and the dead body in this car.
Right.
Which you
right.
didn't know about.
Yeah, it's like, is this your first hitchhiker? I don't know. How many what does he say? Like 25, 30? Who keeps count?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. And so that one's even more, almost more ridiculous. Like, yeah. It's just, yeah, that's exactly what it is, actually. I didn't think about that. Now the sheriff's talking to Stan, and Stan says, an accessory. He's like, he's my friend. Of course, if he is, you know, if he is guilty, we're going to run enough electricity through him to light up Birmingham. And Stan's just rolling his eyes, you know.
Being it's all hyperbole.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's talking to Billy again. Like, did he catch you with the tuna fish? Talk about the clerk. Did he catch you with the tuna fish? I don't know. So you paid for the groceries. When did you shoot the clerk? And Billy says, I shot the clerk. And then the sheriff talking to his one of his deputies.
Gets called away.
I'm in the middle of a damn confession here. And that's where Billy goes, wait a minute. Yeah. Of course, he says, I shot the clerk, but they never bring up the fact that the way he said it was a question, not an admission. You know, that's a little.
And that comes up later on in the trial.
It does.
The sheriff says, he said, I shot the clerk. I asked him again. And he said, I shot the clerk.
Yeah, he did. So Billy and Stan realize they're in trouble, and you know, Billy asks Stan, do you know any great attorneys? And, or no, Stan asks Billy that, you know, any great attorneys? He said, no, I'm going to call my mom. And he's talking to his mom on the phone in the office while the cops are around, and has to tell her that he's, you know, in wanted for murder basically. And he's like, I don't know. I think they're setting us up as patsies. They sleep with their sisters down here. And you know, Stan says, well, some of them do. And then she finds out the mother's asking, like, will they take any attorney? And he's like, great. Oh, that's great. Who? And she tells him, and he tells Stan, have an attorney in the family. Who? My cousin Vinny. And then smash cut to Vinny and Mona Lisa together.
On the way down.
Yeah, driving into town. Everyone's staring at them because they look like they just came from New York, which they did. They look very much out of place. And you know, Vinny says to her, you know, you stick out like a sore thumb around here. No, she says to him. He says, at least I'm wearing cowboy boots. Of course, they're the kind of cowboy boots that no one there would be wearing.
Yeah, they're more like alligator, the steel toe, you know.
Yeah.
Wise guy shit kicking boots as opposed to cowboy boots.
Right, right, exactly. And there's a problem with the car, and they stop, and the one guy, you know, is giving him advice, like, you got mud in your tires. And Vinny says, let me ask you a question. You know, basically, Mona Lisa doesn't believe him, basically. He says, she knows everything about cars. And of course, he laughs at her because, you know, and it's set up a very important story arc of the movie that she really does know a lot about cars.
Except in this thing, she's the one that told Vinny that there was probably mud in there.
Yeah.
And Vinny was like, no, no way. You can't get mud inside the tires. And the guy comes along, oh, you got mud in the tires.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which, of course, they didn't have mud. It was probably clay.
Right. Georgia red clay.
Well, they're not in Georgia.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot.
It may have been filmed in Georgia, but they weren't in Georgia.
Right. I think Alabama red clay is probably, it's probably about the same as Georgia red clay.
The red clay in mm-hmm. Alabama is just a little bit lighter.
Oh, okay.
A little more pinker.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was probably closer to like Alabama Crimson Tide tires, probably.
No.
No?
Okay. They wish it was.
They wish. It's
actually a pinker color.
Okay. The Auburn people don't like that.
Yeah. They want an orange color over there. But
gotcha.
They get pink as well.
But if you people aren't familiar, I mean, I grew up in the Northeast, and when I first moved to Georgia, it was weird to get used to because, yeah, the red clay here is...
Yeah.
It's not brown dirt.
If you get into it, and it is literally like the clay that you would use in modeling class in school when you would make pottery and stuff like that. Well, that was always brown clay, but it was the same consistency. If you get stuck in it somewhere or other, got your foot stuck in it, shoe stuck in it, car stuck in it, bike, you had a job getting undone.
Well, yeah. But also for me, getting used to the color.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not, where I grew up, dirt is brown.
Yeah.
It's not brown here. It's red. Yeah. It's that dark red or whatever it is. It's also a different consistency, but it's also not brown, which is weird. We sort of danced around it, but this movie is filmed in Georgia, even though it's supposed to be in Alabama.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll talk about that more later. But yeah, the dirt. They're going to the prison to talk
to the boys.
Well, no, I'm sorry. This is when Stan and Billy are being bussed to the prison. And the bus driver's saying, we have to take you to the prison that our jail was condemned, you know. And so they're actually going to be held in prison, and the inmates are hooting at them on the way to the cell. And, you know, they're in the cell together. You know what happens in prison, don't you? He's like, yeah, there's only two of us here. And he's like, what about those cots over there? They're setting up the fact that they might get a roommate, too, which... And there's a scene here where Vinny is driving by, and it's got a road sign. I sent this picture to Paul. There's a road sign, and they with several different towns pointing you which direction. And the road sign, they took off the Georgia shaped state road sign and put Alabama as the road sign. They left all the Georgia towns on there, which is pretty hilarious. Like, because this is actually filmed in what is it? The town in
Monticello.
Yeah, Monticello.
Kind of east of Metro Atlanta, maybe 30-40 minutes east of Metro Atlanta.
Yeah, it's I-20 and then go south a little bit further. But they've got Milledgeville on there. They've got Macon, which is a pretty big giveaway because most people know where Macon is. It's got Madison. It's got Eatonton. But it's got a lot of towns that are that direction from Milledgeville.
From the middle of Georgia.
Right, so... It's a little funny that they left him on there. I guess they didn't care that much about accuracy. The inmates are, you know, the inmates are hooting again. You hear someone walking down and Billy's asleep, which is key. Someone new walks into the cell. He tips the guard, which is great. He gives him a tip. This brings us back to the My Blue Heaven episode where he believes in tipping everyone, even if they shouldn't be tipped. Stan doesn't know him, of course. So, you know, Vinny walks in. He's like, oh, he's a little sleeping, cute little guy. He's sleeping, huh? Maybe I'll just start with you. And Stan says, I don't want to do this.
Another
conversation
where both people are talking about different things.
Yeah.
And we know what's going on.
Right.
And they don't know
what's going on. Right, right. And it's a lot of innuendo about prison rape, basically, and you know, Stan says, I don't want to do this, and Vinny says, I understand, but what are your alternatives? And Vinny says, it's your ass, not mine. He says, you're getting me for nothing, you little fuck. I didn't come here just to get jerked off. And Stan's like, I'm not jerking you off. I'm not doing anything. And Vinny says, you know, Stan says, I didn't know it was such an honor to get a visit from you. And Vinny says, you should have some gratitude. You should be down on your fucking knees. You know, it's like 20 different good jokes. They take advantage of the fact that Stan has no idea what Vinny looks like yet.
Yes.
So, did a great job at that.
The only thing I think about this is Stan should have at some point thought, what's this New York guy doing here in this other, southern jail?
You're right.
But wait a minute, New York guy. We're waiting for a New York guy.
Right, right, right. Exactly. They're interviewing Vinny to hear about his professional history. And basically, you know, he ends up saying, this is my first foray into the trial process. And Billy's like, well, you passed the bar, what I think he says, 6 years ago. What have you been doing? It's like,
he studying. Graduated
six years ago.
He'd been studying to pass the bar.
Yeah.
You haven't passed the bar yet? Well, I did pass the bar, but it took six tries.
Yeah. Studying for the bar. Yeah. And studying for the bar is going to be a major plot point in our next movie, too. Not a major plot point, but a plot point. You know, so what have you been working? What have you been doing? You know, personal injury, you know, like, because they're like, well, have you been at a murder trial before? That's okay. What about armed robbery? No. Maybe breaking and entering, assault and battery? No. Personal injury. Yeah.
He's a newbie.
Yeah. And here's where Vinny has to go, you know, get approved or whatever, because he's an out-of-state attorney. And here's where we get to meet the great Fred Gwynne.
Fred Gwynne. And I think this was his last full movie. I think he may have done one or two other things after this.
Yeah.
I think it was his last motion picture.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Vinny is talking to him. Vinny says he went to Brooklyn Academy of Law, and he says, is that an accredited law school? And Vinny looks up on the wall, and there's a diploma from Yale. He's like, yeah. And he asked him about his history of cases. You know, he's like, win some, lose some. And I love the way he says, like Fred Gwynne says, this is not the forum to be cavalier.
Yeah. I love the way he goes, you know that Son of Sam case? He goes, you defended Son of Sam? Yep. No, I defended the guy that saw
him. The first guy.
The first guy.
And you see the look on his face like, okay, guy. You know, he doesn't know what to think, you know. He assumes he's telling the truth, but he's looking at his, like, puzzled look in his eye like, what's going on here? And then he says, most recently I had an axe murder. You want to know the details of the case? Okay. and the Son of Sam thing. And he says, you know, we don't have any serial killers here in Beecham County, but we have every respect for the letter of the law, and I respect you. I expect you to know it, and I'll react arson when you don't. And he hands him the book on Alabama, whatever, the Alabama, like, criminal, whatever stuff he needs to know. And the book makes a loud sound when he drops it on his desk, you know, to show how big the book is. Vinny and Mona Lisa get to the motel. They already checked in, but they're studying. He's studying the book, and I noticed that the music is "Stand By Your Man" is playing on the radio, which is a good little subliminal kind of thing.
Oh yeah,
"Stand By Your Man" is playing, and Mona Lisa is saying, "What can I do to help?" And he's basically like, "Nothing, you know, nothing." And this is where the steam whistle, they're asleep. The steam whistle wakes them up over at the sawmill. And they go to a diner to get something to eat. And they look at the menu. And the menu says breakfast $1.99, lunch $2.49, dinner $3.49, something like that. And they're like, breakfast? Yeah, I think breakfast, you know. And the guy starts cooking it. And he gets a giant helping of lard. He throws on the grill, and
you don't see lard that much more anymore.
No,
maybe
no.
A little Crisco. Not the same thing, though.
No, it's not. What's the difference?
Crisco is kind of like vegetable oil, where lard is more animal oil.
Oh, okay. Chunks. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and he says, "You guys heard about the ongoing cholesterol problem in this country?" And the guy just looks at him like, and they're serving him the breakfast, and it's grits. And it's like, he asks what it is. He's like, "It's grits." "Oh, yeah. I never actually seen a grit before." He said, "Them's hominy grits. Hominy grits." And he tells him how to cook it, which is important. You know, simmer it in water for 15, 20 minutes. I tell him how to cook the grits is an important plot point. And then she takes a picture of the breakfast, and the cook is just shaking his head like,
you know, they both like, "You try it. No, you try it. No, you try it." They're both going back and forth. Did they actually eat it? Did they actually show either one of them eating the grits?
I don't know. You know, I never actually had grits until I moved to the South. I mean, I knew what they were and heard of them, but
it's corn.
Oh, I know. I mean, I like it. It's just, I'd never even had it before, I don't think, in my life. You couldn't buy it at a restaurant up north.
No.
Back then, I'm sure now you could. Cracker Barrel, I'm sure, has it probably. Or
I even think some New York, New Jersey diners do grits as like a cultural thing they pull from
that
part. You know, like they might have a Italian or French or Chinese stuff on the menu. They'll have grits too.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's there now, but when I was growing up, it was like, nah, there's no grits. But yeah, I like them. This is where Vinny is in the courtroom, and he's like sitting on the desk, Trotter, his opposition, walks in and he says, "Is your attorney here?" And he's like, "I am the attorney." So Trotter's assuming he's the guy on trial, probably. This is where they have they meet with the judge and everything. And he's wearing his leather outfit. And this is where the judge says, "Next time you come into my courtroom, you wear a suit and tie. And that suit better be made out of some kind of cloth." and it's the arraignment, just a plea only. And he's saying, you know, "What do your clients plead?" And he's trying to argue their case like they didn't do it. They don't know what's going on. And he said, "Once again, the communication process is broken down." And then he says, "I think I get the point." And he said, "No, I don't think you do. Contempt, one case of contempt." And so he's going to be putting jail for the night for contempt of court. And
but not for the night, because he gets bailed out.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Which is also an important plot point.
Yeah, yeah.
Because had he spent the night in jail,
right,
he never would have had some of the other problems he had.
Right. Well, yeah. But on the way to prison, he's on the bus with the two guys.
Yeah.
And Vinny is literally whistling Dixie. He's whistling Dixie on the way to the prison. This is a great little juxtaposition with these guys are on trial for murder, and he's
their word for the lives, and he's whistling.
Right. Mona Lisa brings him barbecue, and she's with her camera taking pictures of stuff a lot, which is important, of course. they're talking about they're going to nuke this guy Norton this weekend because you see protesters out there about the death penalty. This guy Norton is about to be fried. And basically, Mona Lisa is asking him why he doesn't know more, why he doesn't know what he's doing. And why didn't he go to court and watch, you know, so he could watch how to be a lawyer, basically. And it's like, well, I was so busy, I couldn't do it. And she wants to know what you can do to help. And he's like, yeah, keep bailing me out. And she says, well, I tried hustling money, but I got stiffed. He's like, whoa, you got stiffed. So they go to where she was trying to hustle pool. And the name of the place is Pool and Chicken. And they enter. And they literally walk in, and the jukebox scratches. And you see the guy who's there. And the guy next to him steals the scene. The guy next to him has a whole chicken leg, and he eats.
Yeah,
he sucks the whole thing out, all the meat off of it in one bite. And Vinny says, I'm here to collect. And he's like, how about if I just kick your ass? And he's like, I'm a lawyer. And that's a counter offer. It's like, what if I was ever kicked the ever loving shit out of you? He's like, yeah, you get the money. And then he looks over at the guy with the
brace.
The brace is like, what happened? He said, rear-ended? No, I fell. He said, shit. Looking for someone he can sue.
I know. I like the part where he goes, let me think. Get my ass kicked or get $200. I'll go for the money.
Yeah, yeah.
And his buddy started laughing.
Yeah. He goes, I'm going with option B, kicking your ass and collecting $200. And they're all laughing. His friends are laughing at him. So basically, he's like, so you have the money? He's like, I can get it. I was like, okay, get it.
And when you get it, I'll come back and kick your ass.
Yeah, yeah. So they get back to the motel room, and the faucet is dripping. And this is where Mona Lisa says, it's talking about, you know, basically she tried to fix it. She couldn't. And she's talking about how she used a wrench. And she says the line, this wrench was calibrated by a Caltech physicist. It's dead on balls accurate. And he repeats the word, dead on balls accurate. She said, it's an industry term.
I like that phrase. It's an industry term.
And he's like, I guess the fucking thing is broken. Yeah. And this is where they're back in court, and you see basically there's three, and ends up being four key witnesses, maybe five kind of, but three that are, you know, just witnesses. Mrs. Riley testifies, who's the old lady who has very thick glasses.
Yep.
And Mrs. Riley, by the way, I looked up her filmography. She was in another movie on her list a long time ago, in The Sting.
Uh-huh.
She played the wife of, you know, the what's his name? The guy that gets killed at the beginning? James Earl Jones is...
played by James Earl Jones' dad.
Dad, right. Yeah, okay. She's the wife, which I certainly didn't recognize until now, but yeah.
I did not know that either.
Yeah, she was the wife. So it's good, 19 years between the two movies.
But, was it Mae Whitman? Is that her name?
No. Mae Whitman is Arrested Development. Played Anne Arrested Development. Can't remember her name now, but Miss Riley. And then here the other, I forget his name now, but the other witness, sort of the redneck dude, he's talking about the when he got away. He's like, they peeled away. Car was all over the road. You know, the way he says it.
Oh, yeah. His name is Rain or Shine, believe it or not.
What?
That actor's name.
Really?
The smaller white guy.
Yeah, yeah.
His name is Rain or Shine.
Really?
RayNorSCHEINE, something like that. Wow. I think it's a made-up name. I'm not too sure.
Okay. And then the sheriff's on the stand, and you just hear him say, again, he said, I shot the clerk. You know, Billy and Stan are complaining to Vinny and saying, you know, maybe if you put up a fight, the case thrown out. And Vinny makes a very good point here. He's like, you're in Alabama. You come from New York. You killed a good old boy. There is no way this isn't going to trial. Fair point. And then the next morning, they're in sleep, and then the pigs wake him up. There's lots of pigs going to whatever slaughterhouse, probably next door or something. The pigs are all oinking and waking him up. And, Stan saying, I think we should meet with the public defender. Stan meets with the public defender, and he's going with him, and Billy is still with Vinny. Billy tells Vinny Stan's not coming. Tells him, you know, he's going to go with the Public Defender. And Vinny shows him the card trick. And I was like, you know, basically why he should stick with him. Like, yes, you know, the public, you know, the you know, the prosecutor is, his whole case is an illusion. It has to be because you're innocent, which is a good point. He shows the thin, yeah, you know, the edge of the card, whereas it's made out
he
of.
He wants you to see the face of the card.
Right.
All the solidness of that was really just paper thin.
Right. And he's like, our case is made out of good solid bricks, but theirs is thin, you know, which is a good point because, you know, they know they're innocent. So, and then Billy is talking to Stan, trying to convince him, like, you know, talking about that the magician Alakazam. He's like, Vinny jumped on him. He's like, he's prominent. It's hidden in his jacket, his pocket. It's, you know, but still Stan's going to go with, you know,
Austin, yeah, Pendleton.
Right, right. And this time the train wakes him up. They're all sleeping, and he goes to he rings the bell at the clerk, the hotel desk, and he's like, does that train go by here every morning at 5 a.m.? He's like, no, that's very unusual. Yeah. And Vinny meets with Trotter and tells him a story about his mentor, the guy who, you know, helped him out. It was like, all of a sudden, a guy like me, you know, was a judge. He could, you know, all of a sudden, I felt like, you know, it was actually a sweet story, you know, it was, yeah, pretty good. They're talking about, well, we're going to have to be, we'll talk about that. We'll be back right after this.
What you do in your father's garage?
Tune-ups, oil changes, brake relining, engine rebuild some trannies, rear ends.
Okay. But does being an ex-mechanic necessarily qualify you as being an expert on tire marks?
No. Thank you. Goodbye.
Sit down and stay there until you're told to leave.
Your Honor, Ms. Vito's expertise is in general automotive knowledge. It is in this area that her testimony will be applicable. Now, if Mr. Trotter wishes to voir dire a witness as to the extent of her expertise in this area, I'm sure he's going to be more than satisfied.
Okay.
All right. Now, Ms. Vito, being an expert on general automotive knowledge, can you tell me what would the correct ignition timing be on a 1955 Bel Air Chevrolet with a 327 cubic inch engine and a four-barrel carburetor?
It's a bullshit question.
Does that mean that you can't answer it?
It's a bullshit question. It's impossible to answer.
Impossible because you don't know the answer.
Nobody could answer that question.
Your Honor, I move to disqualify Ms. Vito as an expert witness.
Can you answer the question?
No. It is a trick question.
Why is it a trick question?
Watch this.
Because Chevy didn't make a 327 in 55. The 327 didn't come out till 62. And it wasn't offered in the Bel Air with a four-barrel carb till 64. However, in 1964, the correct ignition timing would be 4 degrees before top dead center.
Well, she's acceptable, Your Honor.
We are back here on the podcast talking about My Cousin Vinny, the number five movie on my list.
Number five.
Getting close. Now, this movie on Rotten Tomatoes, score of 86.
Really? I would think it'd been higher.
Yeah, it should be, right?
I've read a lot of little reviews of this to say it's like one of the more perfect movies.
Yeah, it is. It's a very, it's extremely funny, but it's a very tight script.
Yeah.
Like, really thoughtful and the best, according to me, the best courtroom movie ever made, according to me.
And apparently it is so well thought of by actual lawyers and such that it's used as a teaching tool,
mm-hmm,
in some places that this is really what goes on.
Yeah.
This is what you need to know. These are the mistakes you're going to make. Don't, yeah, make them, but watch in.
Right. And I don't know if I took notes on it, but the thing about Stan talks about, at least about the public defender, is like, it's more than knowing what to say. It's what not to say, which, yeah, is a damn good point.
Yeah.
Because you can fuck yourself up with saying too much or the wrong thing, too. So, yeah, 86, and the public gives an 87. I'm a little disappointed in critics and public because it should be. I expected to see 92 on this one.
Wow.
You know, obviously, I expected to be 100, according to me, but realistically, I expected around 92. I'm surprised by it.
You thought Spinal Tap should be 110.
Right. Well, divided by something.
Yeah.
Budget on this movie, $11 million. The box office, $64 million.
Pretty decent there, yeah.
Well, the multiplier, but I'm just...
The overall.
Overall, compared to the most of the movies on the list, this is near the bottom. Adjusted for inflation, $125 million. So this movie is way more famous than it actually did at the box office.
Like, it probably had a bigger kick from video sales and video rentals.
Oh, yeah.
Considered for box office.
Right, right. And this movie is one of those movies that for most people didn't seem like a great movie, but a lot of people later realize it was a great movie for sure because it's, you know, I mean, $64 million, you know, that's, you know. This movie won, this is maybe the most controversial Oscar in history. Marissa Tomei for supporting actress.
Because who else didn't win it? Was it Meryl Streep didn't win? Or
I can't remember now.
It wasn't so much because she won as who also lost.
Well, I think it's like so many people have said that they think that that she didn't really win. Like they ran the wrong name. I mean, I don't believe that. But
I don't believe it because there's been enough controversy with that type of stuff happening that and I've read on how they do it. They usually have someone who is prepared to correct things in the wings.
Right, right. I don't believe it.
They have an alternate. They have the same input. Right. Okay, that's the correct thing. They've done it right. We don't have to do anything. And And the one time, just a couple of years ago, someone actually read the wrong name because they were distracted. I think it was Warren Beatty, maybe.
Yeah, it was Warren Beatty.
And they corrected it right away.
Best picture, too. Yeah. But I don't believe that, but that's what people have said many times.
And I think one other time, the wrong envelope was given. So when they read the name, it was someone who wasn't even nominated. The thing is, because they give the wrong envelope to the at the end.
Yeah, but you know, anyway, she won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, and that this movie gets a mention in a Seinfeld episode because of it, when George potentially can be set up with Marissa Tomei because she likes quirky, funny, bald men, and then. George is telling Jerry about this, like he throws in Stocky. He's like, oh, no, she threw in Stocky there. I don't think, you know, and he fucks it all up. But he mentions, you know, Marissa Tomei, I love My Cousin Vinny, you know. So it gets mentioned in Seinfeld. I'm going to skip over this next part because I didn't write it down yet. But I want to do it a little bit later. But the director, Jonathan Lynn, he's not a name that almost anybody would know.
But I know some of his movies. Yes. Like The Whole Nine Yards, Clue, Greedy. I've seen them all in the theater. Liked them all.
Yeah. Nuns on the Run, Distinguished Gentleman. Yeah. Bilko was terrible. Watched Salt in Theaters. It's terrible. But yeah, I like Whole Nine Yards a lot. Clue has gotten better and better over the years, according
now,
to people.
The writer of the movie. Mm-hmm. Dale Lawner. Lawner?
Yeah.
Four of the funniest movies ever made. Mm-hmm. Ruthless People, Blind Date, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and My Cousin Vinny.
Right. Yeah, I got that on here. Usually I don't write down the writer of the movie, but yes. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels had a chance of making my list, and I think Ruthless People was great too.
Did you see Blind Date?
I did, but it's been so long.
It was hilarious. I mean, it's dated now.
I think.
But at the time when it came out, man, it was just slapstick. And that was Blake Edwards' film too. They directed that.
Oh, okay. Okay. The tagline is Truth, Justice, and the Gambini Way. So, now the Steve Park Award on this movie, it's got a major part, but you know, seeing Fred Gwynn is great.
Yeah. Herman Munster.
It's funny that two of his, I guess probably his two biggest movie roles are him doing a weird accent. This doing the Alabama accent, and then Pet Cemetery.
Yeah, the main accent. But he's also in the Cotton Club. And, and does his two big TV shows were The Munsters, and before that, Car 54.
Yeah. Where Are You? And it's interesting that the Munsters are in the news because Rob Zombie is making a Munsters movie.
I did not know that.
Really? I'm surprised. I saw the press photos of course, his wife is playing Lily. And then the other two people, I don't know. But
who's Rob Zombie's wife?
Sherry Moon Zombie or something like that. She's in all his movies.
Ah.
And there's a press photo of them sitting in their sort of whatever director's chair, turn around facing the camera of the guy that's playing Herman and then Lily and then Grandpa.
Okay.
So they're all, I'm assuming it'll probably be out for next Halloween probably, but they're filming it right now. So it's been in the news a little bit, and actually if you have Peacock streaming service, there's a Munsters channel, so you can watch Munsters all the time.
All Munsters all the time.
Yeah. Man, there's a lot of, parts of it are very similar to, you know, Netflix, where you have a bunch of shows, but then they also have channels like Pluto's All Channels. They also have a bunch of channels that you can watch stuff.
You can focus in on one show. And
Yeah. Like Pluto, you know, Andy Griffith's channel has a channel, and Adam's Family has a channel. Love Boat has a channel. Mm-hmm. So, now the Bechdel test on this movie.
So we have Mona Lisa Vito.
Uh-huh.
We have Mrs. Riley.
Yeah.
Yeah, that pretty much is it.
Yeah, Mrs. Riley definitely never talks to anybody except for Vinny.
Yeah.
For sure.
So this movie does not pass.
No, no way. No chance. That part of the stats we'll get to in the next segment, but for now we'll get back to the talking about the story. So last we left off, Vinny was talking with Trotter, telling about his mentor, which is a very sweet story. Yeah. About this guy, you know, who helped him out, you know, a guy like me from the same neighborhood. And Trotter asked him to go hunting with him. And Vinny's telling Moon Lisa about going hunting. He's like, what kind of clothes should I wear?
Are these pants good enough?
And the look, but when he says, what am I going to wear? And the look on her face, I've seen this movie so many times. The look on her face is so fucking sarcastic. She's like, what are you going to hunt? It's so great. I never noticed that before. He's like, because I know how the conversation goes, but then what am I going to wear? And she's like, what are you going to hunt? Such a fucking smart ass thing. Like,
it doesn't really matter what you're wearing.
Right.
Which is a point she brings up shortly.
Right. And, you know, it's like, you know, imagine you a deer.
A doe-eyed deer.
Bring your head down to a little brook. You get a little sip of water, and bam, a fucking bullet rips off part of your head. What'd you ask? What'd you say? You're going to ask what the guy, you know, you shot
gonna
you care, was wearing?
You care what the son of a bitch who shot you with Vincent wearing?
I can't believe I never noticed how great that is before. It's like, what are you going to hunt? Like, he's totally oblivious to her line of thinking at that point. Like, and he's talking to Trotters, like, you know, in the car on the way to the hunt, you know, I sure would like to get a look at your files. And Charles like, you would. And he calls his secretary and said, can you, you know, have those copied and sent over to, you know, Mr. Gambini. And he thought he was friends with him. So he gave him something. And then, you know, he gives back all the files. He's like, you know, Mona Lisa says, you stole his files? He's like, no, he gave them to me. And she's like, you know why? Because it's the law, he has to, otherwise it could be mistrial. It's called disclosure, you dickhead. It says that. It's called disclosure, you dickhead. It's so great. She is helping him, but, you know, he doesn't, like, want her to or care at this point. But this is where Vinny is talking to Miss Riley again about her glasses being very thick. And, like, how many different levels of thickness did you go through?
Yeah, this is also off their... Mona Lisa points out that he's allowed to talk to all the witnesses. So he goes back and re-interviews all the witnesses that were on the stand.
Yeah.
Asking them questions.
Oh, right, right.
Pictures
right.
And figuring out how things happened.
Oh, right. He's at her house or whatever. Yeah. And that's the key question for her is how many levels of thickness did you go through for glasses? The big guy, I can't think of his name now, but he's like, what did you have for breakfast? Yeah. And he's like, you know, grits. And then the other guy, the redneck dude, is like, what is that brown stuff? You know, when you're, you know, that's all he says at this point. It's like, what's that brown stuff, you know, on your windows or whatever? And again, he gets waken up the train at 5 a.m. and he's ringing the bell, the hotel desk clerk. And he's like, I thought you said that was unusual. This train coming through at 5 a.m. It is. She's supposed to come at 10 after 4. You know? And,
you know what? At first, I thought this was a really good comic relief that kind of was doing that stuff. Mm-hmm. But this watch through, I realized it also had to do with the law. Mm-hmm. And it had to come back around to asking the right question of the right person. Mm-hmm. You ask the wrong question, you get an answer.
Right.
But you don't get it, the answer you really need to have.
Right.
And that's a part of his learning process. Him going through time after time after time of being woken up in the morning, he finally does something that will help him. It's like a, like little side comedy things, but it's really also teaching him, you know, ask the right question of the right person and you'll get the response you need rather than what you want.
Yes, that's a good point. I never thought about that, but yeah. And here's where Trotter is talking to the jury, basically, you know, proving the jury. And, you know, Trotter says something like, if he's convicted of murder, would you be prepared to? And the woman says, fry him.
Yeah.
He says, she'll do.
She'll do.
this is where the judge talking to Vinny says, like, I just got a fax. There's no record of any Vincent Gambini practicing law. He's like, did you say Vincent Gambini? Yeah. No, I was an actor. I performed under Jerry Gallo.
There was already a Vincent Gambini on the stage, so I had to change my name immediately to Jerry Gallo.
Right.
And when he says it, he knocks over the chess pieces.
Yeah.
Which apparently was accidental, and they kept in the film.
Oh, was it? That's good, because it shows he's...
And also, it also blocks the beginning of the Gallo name.
Mm-hmm. It does. I never thought about it, but it's good. It shows that he's nervous, but... And then Vinny is sort of happy with his lie, and he tells Mona Lisa, he's like, oh, Jerry Gallo. And he says, he was in the papers all last week. She's like, oh, but you didn't actually read the articles, huh? It's because he's dead, you know?
No, it's because he's dead.
Yeah,
exactly. And like the stabbing through the heart.
Right. This is the scene where Vinny, they're all, Trotter gave him the use of his cabin so they could get some rest. And they're on the porch of the cabin, and he's trying to study, and she's walking back and forth and talking about being stressed out about everything. And it's like, meanwhile, my biological clock is ticking like this, stomping her foot. So very famous little scene there. And then Vinny says, you know, I got to worry about his problems, this, not to mention, bam, 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 your biological clock. Can we put any more shit on top of this? Is there any more shit we can pile on top? And then later on, they're sleeping in the car, in the convertible, a car in the field. And she said, this is very romantic, you know, with all the stars. And Vinny says, I don't see no stars. And all of a sudden you hear the thunder, lightning, and then rain. It starts pouring rain down. So in the morning, they put the roof up or whatever, and they slept. And then he gets out of the car, and there's mud everywhere. And he slips and falls and gets mud all over his outfit. And he gets back to the trunk. And, you know, he's trying to start the car, but one tire spins, which is very important, obviously. He slams the car door, falls in the mud. He goes back to the trunk to get basically a board that he can, you know, put under the tire so he can get out of the mud. And when he pulls the board out, he throws this bag out, and he says, where was that pink plastic thing in the trunk? Oh, that's your I got you a new suit, a nice clean suit you could wear.
No, he had already bought the suit,
right?
And he wore it one time in court. He got it dry cleaned.
Right, he just threw it into the mud. This is where and then later they're walking through town, and I think his name's JT, his character. He's like, I got you $200. You're going to kick the shit out of me now? And he just as he's running, just punches him right in the face and takes the money. You see that Mona Lisa is going to the store, the clothing store, and it says store is closed for the flu. And he gets to court, and the judge says, "Are you mocking me with that outfit?" It's like, "Mocking you? No, no." And he says, "Are you on drugs?" He's like, "Drugs? No, I don't take drugs." And he said, "I don't like your attitude." And Vinny's under his breath saying, "That's a fucking surprise." You know?
What'd you say? What?
Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah. Thing? What? Yeah. He actually repeats the word thing. Thing? What? And this is where the prosecutor's opening statement. I love the way he does this. Very, you know, it's just interesting. It's not even trying to be funny. It's just, he's talking about, that's what verdict means, truth. And Trotter says, it's a word that comes down from old England and all of our ancestors. But you have a picture of a black woman in the jury when he says our ancestors. And that's obviously meant as a joke, because not her ancestors, you know.
Post-verdict come from Latin, which is not from old England.
Right. Well, yeah, that too. But I know that putting the black woman there is not as meant as like, not from, she's not from England. So, you know. That's meant as a joke there. The judge says, "Counselor, do you wish to make an opening statement?" And he had been sleeping through the whole thing. And he got up and said, "Everything that guy says is bullshit." And they say, the judge says, "Everything stricken from the record except for thank you." That's where Stan under his breath, calls Vinny a putz. That's where Stan's lawyer gets up. And he gets up to the jury and says, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury. And he's also spitting on them as he's,
yes,
as he's stuttering, which is even worse. He says, "Mr. Tipton's testimony," he says, that's his name, Mr. Tipton. It's like, "So I see you wear glasses. Were you wearing them that day?" It's like, "Nope." And he's like, "Ah, you weren't wearing them." He's like, "He's reading glasses."
Yeah. Your necessary prescription is reading glasses.
Yeah, yeah. So he just, that's one of those things. Then he goes, something you shouldn't
can you,
ask.
Can you tell me the color of the defendant's eyes over there? He goes, "Brown and hazel green."
Yeah, exactly. Like, perfect. Like, more than a human should be able to see from that
don't,
distance.
Don't be asking questions you don't want the answers to.
Right, right. When he's saying, they're talking about, they're asking, I think the redneck dude, "Would you see you saw him better going in than coming out?" And I did say that. Like, "Would you say that?" That's what Vinny's asking. "I did say that. Would you say that?" And this is where Vinny says the two Utes. And the judge says, "The two what? The two what? Utes?
Two Utes?
I'm sorry, youths." And then when he continues, he says, "The two defendants," and looks at the judge, and the judge is like, you know. Tipton's still on the stand there. Tipton's shaking his head. He's like, "Don't shake your head yet. Don't shake your head, Dan. I'm done asking the question. Isn't it possible that there's two similar men, came in and went out?" And Tipton says, "They didn't have enough time." He's like, "Oh, they didn't have enough time. Okay, that's right. You were making grits, right?" And he's like, "Eggs and grits." It's like, I like grits too. How do you cook yours? Regular, creamy, or al dente?"
And the guy's looking and goes, "Regular, I guess."
Yeah, yeah. And he said, "Instant grits?" And he says, "A self-respecting Southerner makes instant grits." And then one of the women in the jury smiles like, "Yeah, yeah." And that's what a great, like, you know.
Setups.
Legal thing. Like, they're using their, you know, their pride of one of their, you know, institutions, grits, you know, to
I
prove.
I wasn't paying attention to see if he was looking at the jury when he gave that answer, because that would be looking for confirmation that his zinger is about to hit home for everybody.
Right. That's a good
point.
If
he's just looking at Tipton, he's not sure how the jury is going to get. I think he was looking at the jury to see, at least an experienced jurist would at least.
Right.
Be looking at the jury to see how they took Tipton's little no self-respecting Southerner would be caught.
Right.
Instant grits. Right. You know, and if the jury was like, "Yeah, that's right," then the next up zinger, the setup and the knockdown really works.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if he was looking or not, but they really use it, you know. And, but he says, how can it take you 5 minutes to cook grits? And he's like, I'm a fast cook, I guess.
He goes, you're not going to take you 5 minutes to cook your grits when it takes everyone in the grit eating South 20 minutes to cook their grits.
Yeah. And he's like, well, perhaps the law of physics ceased to exist in your kitchen. And he keeps saying, are you sure about that 5 minutes? Are you sure about that 5 minutes? He's like, I may have been mistaken. And he says, instead of dismissed, he's like, I have no more use for this guy. Stan, this is where Stan says, you're fired. I want him. He fires his public defender. And Ernie Crane, that was the name of the redneck dude. That was his character name, Ernie Crane. Okay. You know, he's talking about, you know, showing pictures of his place. He's like, what's this on the windows here? Dirt. He's like, oh, yeah, dirt. What are these things out here? Trees. And what do trees have? Thousands of them. Leaves.
Yeah.
Like, what are these things? Bushes.
What are these little bushy things? Bushes.
Yeah. So they're basically showing that, you know, he could have, it would be difficult for him to see, basically, is what they're establishing with him.
Especially since he says he kind of just kind of glanced out the window.
Right.
So how could he make a positive ID if he just kind of glanced out the window through all that stuff?
Yes. Yeah. And this is where Mrs. Riley is her testimony. And he says, were you wearing your glasses? And he was over, like, out, not in front of her. And she's looking in the wrong direction. He said, go over here, dear. And he's saying, and what about your glasses? Like, they got thicker over the years. And he says, maybe you're ready for a thicker set. She's like, no, they're fine. They're fine. He gets a tape measure to measure off the distance and to see, you know, let the count, you know, he goes, hold up fingers. How many fingers am I holding up? And the judge says, record show the counselor's holding up two fingers. He's like, judge. He's like, oh, sorry. But he still holds up two fingers and she says four. And with the tape measure, he gets closer and closer, you know.
Now, I like the one line. And now, Mrs. Riley, tell me, and only Mrs. Riley.
Only Mrs. Riley. And Fred Gwynn with his rolling his eyes at him, yeah. And it's a great little dramatic thing where he's getting closer with the tape measure. Like, you know, maybe it's ready for new glasses. And she's like, and it's great that he was still, you know, he was respectful toward her. He wasn't, you know, he was nice to her, you know what I mean? But it's great the way it went.
It's also an interesting prop thing he did as a lawyer, that when she gave her answer and he left her there, he left the tape measure there across the floor for everyone to see as a reminder of what the little thing happened. He didn't like wrap it up and take it over with him. It was there.
Yeah, so that's a good point. Yeah. And they're done for the day, but then Trotter's talking to Vinny saying, I got a new witness tomorrow. And Vinny said, should I be worried? And he said, I sure would be if I were you. And it's great because they're steering you toward the fact that he's going to win easy right now. And then they throw in wait a minute, something else is going on. It's great plot-wise, you know, just to keep you like, oh, shit, there's actually something else going on here. Wow.
And if it weren't for the next witness, you wouldn't have that great intro for the podcast.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. This is where we get George Wilbur's testimony. Vinny is giving the judge a thing to try to, like, we shouldn't allow this witness kind of thing. And the judge says, that is a lucid, intelligent, well thought out objection. Overruled. You know. Trotter's asking George Wilbur, like, you know, he's using it to test the tire marks. And he's like, I used a Hewlett Packard 5710A dual column gas chromatograph with a flame analyzation detector.
So apparently that was lifted from a trial somewhere. Lunar saw it in a trial, whatever, and he lifted the whole thing, except there's supposed to be ionization, not ionization of the last two birds there.
Oh, okay. So, okay. And then Will Trotter says, is that thing turbocharged? He said, only on the floor models. Trotter asked, this is a memorable moment in the movie. Trotter asked him, you know, when he tested the set of tire marks, so they matched the defendant's car. And he said, what was the result? And George Wilbur says, identical. And Trotter smacks his hand and says, identical. looking at the jury. That was a great. Sorry if that was loud on the podcast, but that was a great moment.
Like, my ears are still ringing.
Yeah, but yeah, such a great plot in this movie. Lots of intelligent, well thought out twists and everything. And so now you feel like, wait a minute, oh, what's going on? You know.
And Vinny asked him pretty much if the tires
are the most common.
Are the most common? The most common tire of the most common size were on the defendant's car. He goes, well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the best he can do at this point. Yes. Like, and then the judge talks about, like, guess what I found out about Jerry Gallo? He's like, did you say Jerry Gallo? Gallo with a G? Yeah.
He's dead.
I'm Jerry Gallo. He's dead. I'm Jerry Gallo.
With a C.
Yeah.
And the judge is frustrated. He goes, I'm going to call him right now.
Right, right. He knows he's full of shit, but he can't prove it. Yeah. Yeah.
He's beginning to think that there's something going on.
Right, right. And, he tries to call, and they're going to call back after three. And, you know, they have lunch recess. And
the judge tells him, you know, he's got like an hour and a half to solve the whole case.
Right.
And so suddenly everyone's under the gun.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to call back after three, and they're in lunch recess, and Vinny's looking at the pictures, and Mona Lisa brings in more pictures. And she's like, can I help? He said, no. And he said, the picture of the tire marks. Could you get any further away? And, here's the case cracker. You got it, honey. Me in the shower. I didn't even think about, I could feel any worse about myself than I do right now. He said, that's it, the case cracker. And she's like, that is it. Like, she knows the tire marks is it, but she's like so pissed at him that she doesn't.
No. What she was saying, that is it, as like we're heading for a fight. That is it. You know, like, I'm ready to go.
Right. Right.
Once the case is over, we're going at it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
But Vinny says, I'm missing something. And then he's not looking, but we see the picture of the close-up of the tire marks.
And then they cut to the courtroom, and he's sitting there, and the defendant's going to make, hey, did you find him? He goes, very little.
Yeah, yeah.
But right there on top is that one picture of that one tire marks a little bit further distance out. And he's just kind of staring at it. He realizes what he's looking at. He knows exactly what has happened now.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll be back right after this.
Ms. Vito, please answer the question. Does the defense's case hold water?
No. The defense is wrong.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
How could you be so sure?
Because there is no way that these tire marks were made by a 64 Buick Skylark. These marks were made by a 1963 Pontiac Tempest.
Objection, Your Honor. Can we clarify to the court whether the witness is stating opinion or fact?
This is your opinion?
It's a fact.
I find it hard to believe that this kind of information could be ascertained simply by looking at a picture.
Would you like me to explain?
I would love to hear this.
So would I.
The car that made these two equal-length tire marks had pods of traction. Can't make those marks without pods of traction, which was not available on the 64 Buick Skylark.
And why not? What is pods of traction?
It's a limited slip differential, which distributes power equally to both the right and left tires. The 64 Skylark had a regular differential, which anyone who's been stuck in the mud in Alabama knows. You step on the gas, one tire spins, the other tire does nothing.
That's right.
Is that it?
No, there's more. You see, when the left tire mark goes up on the curb and the right tire mark stays flat and even, well, the 64 Skylark had a solid rear axle. So when the left tire would go up on the curb, the right tire would tilt out and ride along its edge. But that didn't happen here. The tire mark stayed flat and even. This car had an independent rear suspension. Now, in the 60s, there were only two other cars made in America that had positive traction and independent rear suspension and enough power to make these marks. One was the Corvette, which could never be confused with the Buick Skylark. The other, had the same body length, height, width, weight, wheelbase, and wheel track as the 64 Skylark, and that was the 1963 Pontiac Tempest.
And because both cars were made by GM, were both cars available in metallic mint green paint?
They were.
Thank you, Ms. Vito. No more questions. Thank you very, very much. You've been a lovely, lovely witness.
We are back on the podcast, and we skipped a segment earlier. We're going to do now is what movies were in theaters at the time. The movie was released March
13th,
1992. 92. Yeah. Do you remember when you first saw the movie?
I believe I saw in the theater. What was I doing in 92? So long ago. No, I don't remember.
No? I definitely did not see it in theaters. I saw it. It's one of the many movies in the, at least in the early 90s, that I definitely saw on HBO when I was living fraternity house in college. We had HBO. There's a lot of movies on my list that I love because I watched them a lot over and over again on HBO. My cousin Vinny being one, Groundhog Day being one, Falling Down, Quick Change. Many early 90s movies that I grew to love because I saw them over and over again. You know, New Jack City was one also. Yeah, a lot of the movies on my list were in that segment, and this is definitely one of them. Uh-huh. Did not see it in theaters. But there are some movies that were in theaters at the time. Now this is spring, so it's not a
no summer blockbuster really.
No, not a lot of great movies typically. There's some good. Hand That Rocks the Cradle was there, and Free Jack with Mick Jagger and Emilio Estevez.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, Juice, which I never saw. Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Thankfully, did not see that in the theaters.
Okay. Now, here's a good one, though. Wayne's World.
Oh, I saw that in the theaters.
Yeah, me too. And Wayne's World did not make a list, but it was considered. That's a good one, for sure. Now, here's one that's actually a bad movie, but I love it a lot, is Shakes the Clown.
Oh, with Bobcat.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to love that. I used to watch that movie a bunch. I've seen it more than a lot of movies on my list. I agree that it's not a good movie, but... And I used to love it, though.
Guilty pleasure.
Yeah, exactly. The same day that My Cousin Vinny was released, Howard's End. Those prestige British dramas. Basic Instinct was released exactly 1 week after My Cousin Vinny. That was a pretty big one. And White Man Can't Jump was released 3 weeks later, or 2 weeks later. So that's a good one, too. That one just missed my list. It's in the next 10, for sure. So there's some pretty good movies there, but I just wanted to mention that. And so it's time to play the trivia games we play here on the podcast. Just so you know, we give each other a name. We have to name the movies they've been in. We have 60 seconds to name as many movies as we can. And we're going to start with Paul giving me a name.
Yeah, I'll give you a name.
What name would you like to give me?
I'm going
to
give you a big name.
All right.
With a small man.
Okay.
Joe Pesci.
My Cousin Vinny.
One.
Casino.
Two.
Goodfellas.
Three.
Raging Bull.
Four.
Easy Money.
Five.
The Super.
Six.
Home Alone.
Seven.
Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Eight.
Gone Fishing.
Nine.
The Irishman.
Ten.
JFK.
11.
I might be out.
Out of movies?
I think so. I did really well for 30 Second Burst, but
yeah.
He didn't do many after Gone Fishing until he did The Irishman. Time.
All right. You forgot Goodfellas 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. Thought that was...
he was the breakdancer.
Temple of Doom. Okay, yeah.
Oh, Goodfellas 3, Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
So what do you get for me?
I got one for you. You ready?
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Any Catch Me If You Can.
One.
The Island.
Two.
Was it The Island? It was The Island, wasn't it? No, no, it wasn't The Island.
One.
The Beach. Sorry, The Beach.
Two.
Titanic.
Three.
The Departed.
Four.
Gangs of New York.
Five.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Six.
Wolf of Wall Street?
Seven.
Was it Django Unchained?
Eight.
I think I'm stuck.
All right.
And time is running out. Time.
Yeah.
Any big name I missed? Probably a couple of really big ones.
Probably. I was concentrating on counting The Aviator.
Oh, The Aviator, yeah.
Romeo and Juliet?
Romeo Juliet or Romeo plus Juliet.
Oh, right. I was...
Was he in The Basketball Diaries?
I think so.
Was that him?
Yeah. Last couple seasons of Growing Pains.
Well, that wasn't a movie, so
no, okay. It's as good as a movie, but you know. Yeah, so that's one of the games we play here. So it's when I say time to pick who's your guy in this movie.
Yeah. Joe Pesci.
Joe Pesci? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he kills it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna pick Lane Smith, Trotter.
Lane Smith.
He's been in a bunch of movies, and
he was underrated. Perry White in Lewis and Clark.
Oh, that's right.
Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher.
Yeah. He's been in a lot of movies and does a great job. I like him a lot. Lane Smith, Trotter, as the prosecutor.
How many movies on your list was Joe Pesci?
Four? Joe Pesci.
Three, four.
See, this, Casino, Goodfellas, Home Alone.
It's four there. Is there another one?
It's probably it. Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Let's see. And Bruce McGill was also in one of your movies.
Yeah, we have it. That's right. Yeah, he's from Animal House, D-Day.
He's also in Delta House, the TV spinoff.
Oh, okay.
And if you're a law-abiding citizen with Gerard Butler, he was the head FBI guy that got killed. He was his like boss mentor.
Okay.
Of Jamie Foxx's character.
Okay.
And if you're a fan of sci-fi TV, he was in the last episode of Quantum Leap
as
mysterious bartender.
The bartender in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And I used to love Quantum Leap. And
the guy played Stan, probably his biggest thing outside. He's done a lot of voiceover stuff, but he was on Friends. He was Barry.
He was Rachel's
the man she left fiance. The dentist.
Yeah, that's his most famous thing for sure. Everybody knows Friends, and he was
probably the most high profile live action
set. For sure. Mitchell.
But I was looking at stuff. He has done a crap load of voiceover stuff.
Yeah. So there's one other person in this movie that's in a movie on my list. Do you know who it is?
Yeah, let's see. Is it
I'm guessing. Where he is billed in this movie, I'm guessing he's probably the 10th or 11th billed person.
No. Let me look down the list. Let me do it through my head. I don't know. Who is it?
JT, the guy who fights for the money.
Oh. What was he in?
It's a movie we haven't done yet.
Oh, okay. That's probably why.
Catch Me If You Can. He's one of Tom Hanks's bosses, at least in the early part of the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Early part of the movie, looks like he's his boss. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't expect you to know that. In fact, I didn't realize it until I watched Catch Me If You Can. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's him. Shit. I mean, I knew his face. He'd been in a lot of things, but, you know, yeah. That's our guy. It's time to go back to talking about the story here. Now, Vinny's cross-examining Wilbur, and this is where he says, is this the most popular size, the most popular tire?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, but two 1964 Buick Skylark convertibles, which is a pretty good point. Like, you know, that's That's pretty hard. But
also a point that comes back around to help Vinny.
Yes, it does. It does. We don't know that yet, but yes, it ends up helping him. You know, Vinny looks at the tire marks and we don't know what he's thinking, but he sees the tire marks and he asks the sheriff, he's like, "Sheriff, please trace this." And he hands him a piece of paper. And he's like, "You do your own investigating." And he's like, "Please, please, you know.
Only got 3 minutes."
Yeah. And he goes out and talks to Mona Lisa. He's like, "Lisa, I need you. Come back and
report." She's on the phone.
Right.
She's not actually talking to him, but she's on the phone.
Right.
And while she's on the phone, whatever, he hangs up the phone on her.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never quite brought up. I'm pretty sure that's where she was talking to Malloy.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Because someone had to get to Malloy to let him know what's going on.
Well, she says later that she did.
Yes, but you don't know when that happened. No, but there she was on the phone.
Right, right.
So I think that's what she was doing.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah. And, you know, she doesn't want to help him. He's like, "No, I hate you," you know. And he gets her on the stand. And, you know, she's on the stand. And Trotter is basically... Vaudoir, yeah, to see basically her level of expertise about cars. And Trotter says, "You're supposed to be some kind of expert in automobiles." I think the judgment's in something like a hostile witness. She's like, "You think I'm hostile now? Wait till you see me tonight." That's Vinny saying that,
yeah.
Trotter's asking Mona Lisa about her qualification. He's like, you know, talk about her dad owned a mechanic shop, her brothers. It's like, "Well, obviously your family's qualified, but what did you do?" It's like, "I did, you know, trannies, I did oil changes, I did, you know, what are all this stuff?" And it's like,
injury bills.
Yeah. Basically he's trying to pin her down of like making her say, "Hey, yeah, I was the bookkeeper or I was the secretary. I wasn't really doing this stuff."
Yeah.
Trotter gives her a trick question and you know, it's a bullshit question. It's like, why? Because you can't answer it? Like, because Chevy didn't make a such and such. He asked her a quick question. Like, if she doesn't know the answer, then she really doesn't know much about cars. Vinny has her on the stand. And it's been argued that two different sets of, you know, guys.
It's been argued by the defense.
Right.
That two different sets of guys.
And it's 1964 Buick Skylar. It's like, does the defense's case hold water? And he keeps asking her that. And she's like, "No, the defense is wrong." And you think they're defeated. Like,
but then Turner goes, "Are you sure?" And she goes, and she says, I'm positive. And the way she says it, the first time I saw it, I thought it was just affectation.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm pretty sure she was letting him know positive traction was the big thing.
Oh.
I'm positive.
Oh, I didn't know.
Positive traction.
I didn't think about that.
That you was letting them know that I know what's going on now. You know what's going on. Right. Play it out.
Right.
And it's going to work.
Okay. Yeah. I never thought about that.
Like
a
verbal clue.
Okay.
Not just, I'm positive, but I'm positive. Why I say it like that?
Mm.
Unless there's a clue being given.
That makes sense. Yeah.
They're talking to each other like they do.
Okay. Yeah. And she says, "There's no way these tire marks were made by a 1964 Buick Skylark. These tire marks were made by a 1963 Pontiac Tempest." And he says, "Opinion or fact?" She's like, "It's a fact." And Vinny says, "I would love to hear this." And the judge says, "So would I." Yeah. And she says, "Positive traction. Anyone who's been stuck in the mud in Alabama knows you step on the gas, one tire spins, the other tire does nothing." You know. And she talks about independent rear suspension. It's like basically the only two cars that could have been made these marks. Where one was a Corvette, she said, we could never be confused with a 1964 Buick Skylark. The other one was a 1963 Pontiac Tempest.
Same wheelbase, same size, same manufacturer.
Right. And he says, because both cars were made by GM, were both cars available in metallic mint green paint? She said, they were. And so for Mr. Trotter, you know, would you like to question Miss Vito? And he's like, no. And then Vinny says, in that case, I'd like to recall George Wilbur. And while he was getting ready to question him, the sheriff walks back in and holds a piece of paper up, nodding at Vinny, like lets him know that some good news, at least. He doesn't know what, but some good news. not the news he's looking for, but even better, actually. And Vinny asked, George Wilbur, would you say everything she said was accurate? And he's like, yeah. And he said, she's cute too. He's like, very, yeah. and so he's done with George Wilbur, and he calls Sheriff Farley. And Sheriff Farley says, puts his glasses on. He's like, on a hunch, I traced, I found a 1963 Pontiac Tempest in Jasper County, Georgia. And he's like, is that it? No, a 357 Magnum was found in their possession. And just to clarify, what bullet was used to kill Jimmy, like 357 Magnum. And then Trotter, everyone's all happy and everything. And they're asking for Trotter, and Trotter stands up, like, in the case of this, state would like to miss all charges. So the trial's over. They won. Everyone's happy. And
Vinny's trying to get out as fast as possible before the judge finds out that Jerry Callow doesn't exist.
Right. And Trotter's talking to Vinny. He's like, come down next time. Hell, I said, hell, we'll get us a deer next time. And this is where the judge says, I have a fax here from the clerk of New York. And Vinny is putting his hands up like for handcuffs, and the judge shakes his hand. He's like, win some, lose some. I got to hear the very impressive whatever resume of a Jerry Callow, and he doesn't know how he got it, so he says goodbye to the judge, and they get in the car with Mona Lisa, and he says, what the hell was that all about back there? And she said, I have a friend fax the very impressive resume of a Jerry Callow. Like, what friend do you have? Yeah, Judge Malloy.
He was your friend, Judge Malloy.
Yeah. And he's like, what, and she's like, this whole thing, you couldn't win with anyone else. Like, what a fucking nightmare. You have to win help somebody else.
You win case after case after case and then have to thank somebody for helping you.
What a fucking nightmare.
And then he goes, you know what this means?
Yeah.
I won my first case.
Yeah.
And she goes, what, you think I'm going to marry you now? You can't even win a case on your own.
You're fucking useless.
You're fucking useless.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how it ends. And them driving off, country music song playing. I think it might be Travis Tritt.
It is.
Driving down the road. And
this movie, I sure wish they just followed really quick with a sequel. A good one would have been Fred Gwynn or Lane Smith's character in New York with Vinny defending them for a whole another misunderstanding, cultural misunderstanding going on, that would have been nice, but never happened.
Yeah, that would have been great. This movie was just, I mean, it's really funny, but.
Now, although that there was no movie sequel, apparently there's a series of books out there that just started up like in the last year or so, starting with novelization of the movie and then following up with other stuff with Vinny back in New York establishing his law firm.
Oh, really?
And they're all kind of comedy, mystery, crime stuff.
Okay. And this movie, I've shown this to many people over the years. Like, you never seen this? You need to see this.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of cousins and friends of the cousins that live in Jersey. And I had this on VHS and I showed it to them. And they fucking loved it because it's a New York guy. And,
It's funny because I've read a lot of stuff about how movies are made. And there are two movies that have been spoken of as having near perfect scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Like classic, this is how a movie should be made from beginning to end type scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them co-star Ralph Macchio. The other was Karate Kid.
Really?
This one and Karate Kid.
Oh, okay.
That it was just the whole setup from beginning to end was all.
Yeah. I mean, the story on this is so tight. I mean, it's even if this was a drama, it would be a great movie, but it's really funny too, on top of really funny. When I put my list together, I had certain segments of movies and I said, well, what's going to go this, this, and this. So this is 5, Planes, Trains, Automobiles was 6, and The Big Lebowski were 7. And those three, I was looking at, like, what goes where? And, I decided my cousin Vinny at 5, and I'm glad I did, because, man, this movie makes you, like, cheer at the end when she comes up with that testimony and everything, yeah, and the way that the plot comes together, it just is a good choice at number five. I love this movie. Loved it first time I saw it.
A couple things I noticed for the first time this last watch through was when they had Miss O'Reilly kind of identify the car from a photograph, and mm-hmm. they talk about the color and blah blah blah. The photograph they show is black and white.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So okay, they hand her a stand. Is this the car you saw? It was a black and white photo.
Oh, okay.
So how would you know?
Right.
And, you know, it might look like it, but the color and all stuff. Who knows?
Right. So, okay.
Things like that, and the ending with the Sheriff Farley. He goes, "Well, we found a gun. It was a 357 Magnum. And what bullet killed you? Well, it was a 357 Magnum. Well, it wouldn't have been a 357 Magnum bullet because that's all they had. It would have been the caliber of bullet, which was like a 38 or something like that. So that they wouldn't know what gun shot it, and they wouldn't call it a 357 Magnum. The bullet, just the gun would be the 357.
Oh, okay. This movie is just, there's a reason why it's number five on the list. It's really outstanding. It's
tight and well made. And
yeah. You know, the best movie Joe Pesci's ever made. That says a lot. But for me, it's easily the best movie Joe Pesci was ever in.
Better than Easy Money?
Yeah. Yeah. I like Easy Money.
It didn't make your list though.
No. But man, he was so great in this movie. So it's time to talk about the villains list. Now, these are the top 10 villains with only five movies to go. It's going to be tough to crack this top 10, but yeah, here it goes. At the bottom, number 10 is Bricktop from Snatch, Nino Brown from New Jack City, Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds, Dudley Smith from LA Confidential, the Xenomorph from Alien, Nurse Ratchet from Cuckoo's Nest, Wicked Witch of the West from Wizard of Oz, Norman Bates from Psycho, Hannibal Lecter from The Silence of the Lambs, and our recently crowned number one villain of all time, Michael Myers from Halloween. So who's the villain in this movie?
Who's the villain? The closest thing to a villain is Trotter,
mm-hmm.
but he's not really a villain. He's just the one that's impeding Vinny from achieving his goal. And because of the nature of the trial, it's not really an impediment such as, you know, a real stumbling block. Is more like a, you know, a wall to climb, a ladder to climb.
Yeah.
The judge, perhaps, because he keeps trying to ferret out the truth about Vinny.
Yeah.
It's no villain. I don't really see a villain.
Nah.
And even the guys that shot the clerk, you never see that.
Right.
So, no villain at all. I really don't see any villain at all here.
And even if they were, there's no chance.
If you want to make an argument for anyone, they're not going to make the list.
There's no way. Bricktop is at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
He's pretty fucking evil.
Yeah.
Whoever the villain is, JT, maybe at the pool hall, but whoever it is,
no,
they don't make the list for sure. So we already know what this is on the list, so Paul doesn't get to guess. If you were to guess, you'd say number five, right?
I'm going to go ahead and pencil it in as number five, because I'm pretty sure it's there.
Okay. So would this make your top 100 list?
Yeah.
Yeah,
this would be in my top 100. I'm not sure exactly where. Top 20, I think, though.
Yeah.
It's just a well-made movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny as hell.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It still is funny to me.
Oh, yeah. So what didn't make the list, I'm going to mention, there's a lot of Joe Pesci movies. There's many that did not make my list.
Raging Bull's not on your list.
Raging Bull's not on my list. I think the closest Joe Pesci movie to making my top 100 did not. Honestly, it might be Home Alone 2, which is still a pretty good movie. JFK didn't make the list. I like it, but I don't like it that much anymore. Easy Money is a fun movie, whatever. Probably Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Doesn't come that close to make my list, but it's probably the closest one. Do you have any plugs?
I do not at this time have any plugs.
Okay. Plugs are just going to be the podcast. We're one thing I've mentioned many times, a public service you can do is if you're listening, you listen to podcasts, but you have friends that say, what is a podcast, and have no idea how to download it or think you have to listen to something live. Teach them how to download the podcast, how to subscribe, how to like, how to set for automatic download. Teach someone how to do it and the stuff they might like. So it's time to talk about what we're doing next week on the podcast. Now, next week, we know we're doing number four on the list.
Yes, so number four.
It's a pretty damn good movie. So next week, cash your Pan Am paycheck, get professional advice from Perry Mason and Marcus Welby, and fly 6,000 miles per hour at an altitude of 300 feet. That's right. Next week, we're talking about Catch Me If You Can on 100 Movies I Love.
100 Movies You Love.
So, we got some case ahead of us here, huh?
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about it?
I'd like to have a murder weapon. But other than that, I feel pretty good.
You do?
Oh, yeah. Hey, what are you doing this afternoon?
You going hunting?
That's right.
Why are you going hunting? Shouldn't you be out preparing for court?
I was thinking last night. If only I knew what he knows, you know? If he let me look at his files. Oh, boy.
Well, I don't get it. What does getting to Trotter's files have anything to do with hunting?
Well, you know, two guys out in the woods, guns, on the hunt. It's a bonding thing, you know? Show him I'm one of the boys. He's not going to let me look at his files, but, you know, maybe he'll relax enough to drop his guard so that I can finesse a little information out of him. What am I going to wear?
What are you going to hunt?
I don't know. He's got a lot of stuffed heads in his office.
Heads? What kind of heads?
I don't know. He's got a boar, a bear, a couple of deer.
Whoa, you're going to shoot a deer?
I don't know. I suppose. I mean, I'm a man's man. I could go deer hunting.
A sweet, innocent, harmless, leaf-eating, doe-eyed little deer.
Hey, Lisa. I'm not going to go out there just to wimp out, you know? I mean, the guy will lose respect for me. Would you rather have that? What about these pants I got on? You think they're okay? Oh!
Imagine you're a deer. You're prancing along. You get thirsty. You spot a little brook. Put your little deer lips down to the cool, clear water. Bam! A fucking bullet rips off part of your head. Your brains are laying on the ground in little bloody pieces. Now I ask you, would you give a fuck what kind of pants the son of a bitch who shot you was wearing?